Who will you influence today? Researchers estimate that each of us makes either a positive or negative impact on an average of 2.8 people per day. Over the course of a lifetime, we influence tens of thousands of people, but most of us do it unconsciously. If we paid more attention to how we're influencing others, we might make larger positive differences in people's lives, benefiting our own relationships and strengthening our careers. In the new book, The Gift of Influence, Creating Life-Changing and Lasting Impact in Your Everyday Interactions, author Tommy Spaulding offers tips on how to be more mindful of your influence. Tommy is a leadership expert and consultant and the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Heart-Led Leader. He joins us now to share five ideas from his new book.
Hello, I'm Tommy Spaulding. I live in Denver, Colorado, married with three kids. I'm an author of leadership books. My first book is called It's Not Just Who You Know, about building authentic, genuine, lifelong relationships. My second book was called The Heart-Led Leader, about being a servant leader and bringing love to the workplace. And my third book, The Gift of Influence. And I'd like to share about that book with you. Number one, the power of positive influence. I heard a story years ago that just moved me in a way that I knew I wanted to write a book about the power of influence. It's a true story about an eighth grade math teacher named Mrs. Lynn. And Mrs. Lynn taught in a little town outside Lincoln, Nebraska, eighth grade algebra. And one day she was teaching math on a Friday afternoon, but not just any Friday afternoon, but the Friday afternoon, the last period of the day, the last period before spring break. So she's 50 minutes away from spring break and 36 students walk into her room and the kids are bouncing off the walls. And so she realizes that she wasn't going to be teaching algebra that day. So she calls an audible, as all seasoned teachers do. And she says, everyone take out a piece of paper. And she took out a piece of chalk and she wrote all 36 students' names on the board. And she asked all 36 students to write a kind word about each and every one of her students. And that's what the kids did during their math class. Well, spring break started, and during her spring break, what she did, she took 36 blank pieces of paper and she transcribed all those beautiful words about each and every one. So every kid got a piece of paper with their name on it with 36 beautiful words that their classmates said about them. The following Monday, she passed the piece of paper out, and for 10 minutes, Mrs. Lynn just marveled on watching these eighth grade students read great words about them. Some of the kids were crying, laughing, chuckling, wiping back tears. It was a beautiful exercise. And Mrs. Lynn never brought up the exercise or that piece of paper ever again. This was in the early 1960s. So fast forward now, about 5 or 6 years later, it's now the mid to late 1960s. And Mrs. Lynn gets a phone call that one of her former students was killed in Vietnam. And it wasn't just any student, but one of her former eighth grade algebra students that went on to high school, become quarterback of the football team, got drafted and was killed. They had a funeral service for him, the first fallen soldier killed in this small little town. And Mrs. Lynn attended the funeral of her former eighth grade student. And she was invited back to Mark's house, the former student's house, to continue celebrating his life. And she was in the kitchen eating sponge cake, kind of watching all the people talk about Mark's life. And Mark's father walks up to her and says, are you Mrs. Lynn? And she says, yes, I am. And she goes, do you mind following me? There's something I want to give to you. And so Mrs. Lynn follows Mark's father back into the third bedroom to the left. He opens the door. Within seconds, Mrs. Lynn's in Mark's childhood bedroom. She had goose pimples and she sees the Cornhusker duvet, the football trophies on this, you know, on the wall and pictures of famous quarterbacks. She knew that she was in Mark's childhood room. But then she sees a foreign object on the bed that gives her shivers down her spine. It was a war infantry helmet, a camouflage infantry helmet. And it was almost like Mark's father could read her mind. So he went over to the bed, picked up the helmet and handed it to her and says, this is what I want to give to you. And she didn't understand. Why is he giving this to me? I'm just his eighth grade algebra teacher. And he says, turn it upside down. And so she turns it upside down, and tucked under those rubber bands that hold a war helmet to a soldier's head, there was a six-year-old yellow stained scotch tape crumpled piece of paper. She pulled it out and opened it up, and it was her handwriting at the top that said Mark, with 36 great words about him. And Mark's father looks at her and says, my son loved this piece of paper, carried it wherever he went. And when he was found killed last week in Vietnam, that piece of paper that you gave to him years ago was tucked under his war helmet. you had a huge influence on my son. Number two, 80,000, the stadium. I remember when I first heard that story, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was so deeply moved that I knew I wanted to write a book about the power of influence, because I knew that I wanted to live a life like Mrs. Lynn. I wanted to live a life where I had a chance to impact thousands of lives every day. And years ago, I heard the statistic, some research was done that the average human being lives to 78 years old on the planet, and the average human being on the planet influences up to 80,000 people in their life. And how they got to that research, that number is 80,000 people divided by 78 years, divided by 365 days, you get 2.8 people. So every day from the day we're born to the day we die, we meet 2.8 new people a day. 2.8 people a day times 365 days times 78 years is 80,000 people. And I started thinking about that. 80,000 people, that's a lot of people. What if we got to meet them? What would that look like? What if at the end of our life, before we died and went to heaven, or wherever we go, wherever our faith takes us, what if we got to meet every single person that we've influenced positively or negatively in our entire life? All 2.8 people every day. Where would they fit? They'd fit in football stadiums. Turns out there's hundreds of football stadiums around the world with exactly 80,000 seats. So you pick your football stadium. At the end of your life, before you go home, wherever that place is, you walk on a 50-yard line of a stadium. And every single person that you've met, the barista at Starbucks, the Uber driver, the new neighbor, the new employee, the customer, the client, the 80,000 people that you've influenced in your entire life are in the stadium to say goodbye. And the question I asked in the book, The Gift of Influence, and the question I ask you now is, what's the sound of that stadium? What's the sound of that stadium? Because that sound is your legacy. Are they pounding their things and giving you a standing ovation and clapping and screaming your name because you've had a huge influence on their life? Or are they booing because you spent your whole life thinking about yourself and putting yourself first and not serving others and not making a difference in other people's lives because this world was all about you? Or even worse, is the stadium silent and not even a breath of air, not even one sound, because you spent your whole life looking down at your phone and not looking up at the people in front of you? And so our legacy is really that sound at a stadium, and the gift of influence is really about, how do you live a life every day that we embrace the 2.8 people that we meet and we have a positive influence on them? Number three, run towards pain. How many times in our lives, when someone's going through a tough time, they're going through a depression, they're going through bankruptcy, they're going through a divorce, they're going through a tough time with their son, they're going through some sort of pain, right? How many times do we say to people, hey, Corey, I'm so sorry for your divorce. If there's anything I can do, you let me know. We say those words all the time. If there's anything I can do, let me know. And what we're really saying is, I don't really want to do anything, but I want to be polite. And I want you to think that I want to do something. So I'm going to say these words. And I know you're never going to call me up and say, you know what? There is something that I want you to do. So I'm just going to say it to be polite. It is the most transactional, insincere thing to say. So when I find that people are going through a tough time, instead of saying, hey, if there's anything I can do for you, let me know, I say, Corey, I know that divorce is tough. My wife was divorced before I got married to her, and I know how painful it is. I got this great book that I want to give you. Can I come over to the house sometime tomorrow? What time works for you? Or you just insert what I'm going to do for you. I'd like to help. Here's what I want to do for you. Number four, don't walk on by. We have a chance to meet 2.8 people a day. We have a chance to meet hundreds of people every day, depending on our attitudes about meeting people. But we walk on by all the time. Just the other day, my wife and I dropped off our 14-year-old son at boarding school. I never thought in a million years my son would be going to boarding school. I didn't grow up with that. My parents were public school teachers. But my son plays hockey and is one of the most elite 14-year-old players in the country. So he was asked to play for Shattuck St. Mary's, which is the number one hockey prep school in the country outside Minneapolis and Faribault, Minnesota. We dropped him off a few weeks ago, and I didn't want to cry to saying goodbye because I wanted to be strong for him as his father, but I knew he was in pain. I didn't want to cry in front of my wife, so we just said our goodbyes. We got in the car and we drove back to the airport, my wife and I, Jill. We get to Minneapolis airport. We're having a glass of wine, having a little lunch. I told her I'm walking to the gate. I'll see her at the gate. Paid the bill. When I was walking to the gate, I passed by a Caribou Coffee shop, which is kind of like the Starbucks of Minneapolis. And there was a young woman at the Caribou Coffee right in plain sight, just bawling, crying. And she was writing a letter. I mean, she was not just crying, but she was like really crying. And I just walked right by her, right? And got went into my gate. Anyway, I got to the gate, and for some reason, I had the urge to turn around, that young lady could be one of my 2.8 people that I was supposed to meet that might be in my stadium one day when I die. So I just turned around and walked right back to the Caribou Coffee. I didn't ask permission to sit down. I just grabbed a chair and sat right down and said, "You having a rough day?" And she just looked at me and started crying. She said, "Yeah, I'm from London, and my boyfriend's from Minneapolis. We have this long distance relationship. It's not working. And I'm writing my boyfriend a goodbye letter, and it's painful." And I leaned into her and I said, "I just dropped my 14-year-old son 2 hours ago at boarding school, and I'm missing him, and I'm terribly in pain too." And so I started crying, and before you know it, I'm giving her a hug, and we're kind of crying together. My wife walks by and sees me hugging this lady, and she's thinking, "There's my husband, you know, trying to influence the world." I never got this lady's name or number or phone number or contact information. I'll probably never talk to her again, but she'll be in my stadium. She'll be in my stadium because I didn't walk on by. I turned around and walked towards people that are going through a tough time. Number five, the three questions. You know, when I was writing the end of the book, I was really thinking about, you know, how I should close the gift of influence. And I remember being at a dinner party years ago, and I sat next to this woman and her husband at this dinner party, and she was a hospice nurse. She's been a hospice nurse for almost 40 years, and I was amazed by her. She's helped thousands of people die and pass on and get to heaven or wherever your faith takes you. And I was just enthralled by learning from her. And I said to her, "Well, what's it like? I mean, I helped our grandfather, you know, with the hospice get to heaven, but I've only had one person die in front of me. What's it like having thousands of people die in front of you?" And it was amazing what she said. She first said, "Well, first of all, it's a sad job because a lot of these people are alone. And so I take my job very seriously, making sure I comfort them, that they feel valued before they die." But the second thing she said blew my mind. She said, "They all ask the same three questions. Doesn't matter what color skin you have, or religion, what political party, what you do for a living, where you live in the world, but all the people I help die and get to heaven, the thousands of people, they all ask the same three questions. Was I loved? Did I love back? And did I make a contribution?" Was I loved? Did I love back? Did I make a contribution? Well, now we know the questions that we might ask, or we may ask when we're 78 years old, or 88, or 98, or 108, when we die. If we know the questions we're going to ask now, why don't we start living those questions every day? Was I loved? Did I love back? Did I make a contribution? The word influence has been hijacked. It's been hijacked by the marketing geniuses and giants of social media. To be a true influencer means how many likes you have, how many tequila bottles and pocketbooks you can sell on the internet. I want to hijack that word back. To be a true influencer is waking up every morning and having a positive influence in the lives of others, to make a difference in people's lives, to invest in people, to turn around and hear their story, and to make them become better human beings by your love and your support and your friendship and your mentorship. I hope that the people that read The Gift of Influence are inspired to live life differently, inspired to lead differently, inspired to love differently, that they look at their life as an opportunity to meet 2.8 people every day. And at the end of their life, they'll have 80,000 people in their stadium screaming and thanking them for the difference that you've made in their life. Thank you for the opportunity for letting me share my book, The Gift of Influence.
Thank you, Tommy. That was Tommy Spaulding with five big ideas from The Gift of Influence, creating life-changing and lasting impact in your everyday interactions. For more thoughts on how to have a positive impact on the lives of those you work with, have a listen to our book bite for Trust and Inspire, How Truly Great Leaders Unleash Greatness in Others by Steve Hertz. I'm Rufus Griscom. Thanks for listening.